The last casualties. These are the last people, at least that can officially be found to have been the last person for the French, the British, the Canadians, and the Americans to die in World War I. Now, I was unable to find the last Australian and the last New Zealander. The German one's pretty easy to figure out because they're so disorganized in their retreat, it's hard to tell when their last casualty took place. At any rate, you end up with the following people: Private G.E. Ellison from Britain, George Price, also a private from Canada, Joseph Albert Trebuchon from France, and Henry Gunther of America. Now, as the clock ticked down towards 11 a.m. on November the 11th, 1918, the Allies are still advancing in several sectors, and the Germans, for the most part, were dismantling their equipment and withdrawing as fast as they could. However, they left snipers behind. They still left some artillery to provide some support for their troops as they retreated. Both sides had been informed, and the vast majority on both sides were just relieved that, finally, it's going to be over. The trouble is, this is something you always forget, that there are diehards on both sides. On the one hand, you have Foch, who says keep attacking until you're told to stop. And then you've got other people, they lost friends, relatives. The war is going to end. We're running out of time. Exact a pound of flesh from the Germans, or exact a pound of flesh from the French or the British or the Americans or whoever. So we still have some people who are looking for an opportunity to kill. Now, one instance happened in the area where the Germans signed the armistice. There's a group of five men from the French 5th Company of the 171st Infantry. Their only misfortune is they happened to be near the railroad cars that were used in the armistice. Obviously, a target of shame as well as opportunity. But there is an artillery shell that just missed the train cars and ends up landing where the five French soldiers were, killing them. Unfortunately for them, they're not the only ones. They're not the last ones to die. That occurred at 10:50 a.m., 10 minutes until 11. A 25-year-old runner, Joseph Albert Trebuchon, brought the message to the frontline troops near the Varennes-Meuse area. The message was very simple. He went to regimental command and informed the commander that the cooks had told him that hot soup was to be served at 11:30 a.m. Crack! A sniper's bullet hits Trebuchon in the head and kills him. He's the last French soldier killed. Then you go to the Mons sector. The British forces were trying to recapture as much territory as possible, in particularly the area around Mons. Now, the 5th Royal Irish Lancers, which is actually a unit that was at the First Battle of Mons in August of 1914, and the 7th Dragoons, again, both cavalry units, mounted a charge at 10:50 a.m. on November the 11th. This was defended later by high command, saying that they needed to capture a key bridge just in case the Germans didn't abide by the armistice. As the cavalry moved forward with their swords in hand, very effective, they galloped towards the German lines, and a German machine gun unit then ripped into the 7th Dragoons. By the time the 5th Irish Lancers came on the scenes, the Germans were running, but the British had lost their last casualty. That was Private G.E. Ellison. Now, he ends up being buried in a military cemetery not far away from Private J. Parr, who was Britain's first World War I casualty, who was killed on August the 21st, 1914. In the same Mons sector, the Canadian forces lost their last man. Now, they lost 280 killed on November the 11th. The Canadian 2nd Division was attacking German forces at a miner's house. At 10:58, a sniper killed Private George Price of the 38th Northwest Infantry Battalion, and he ends up being Canada's last death. Of course, now on November the 12th, both the British and Canadian forces could have just walked into Mons. General Sir Arthur Currie said, quote, "The reason Mons was taken was that we obeyed the orders of General Foch that we go on until we were ordered to stop." You know, that's real easy for the general to say, sitting back at headquarters, not really worried about getting sniped or anything else. This is part of the problem with World War One, the number of commanders that were out of touch with what was going on up at the front. You notice all of these poor individuals who are getting their last shot are all privates. We don't have the generals up there. And again, for example, at one of the articles that I was reading talked about the fact that, you know, the British then fought back and recaptured Mons just before the armistice. But it took them 700,000 troop casualties, to reach that spot from the point of 1914, which is not a gain. They just went back to where they were. And so it is just the idiocy of the war. We couldn't even just say, you know, it's over. Let's just keep going. You know, just leave everything alone. No. We got to keep going. And even in the American area, I mean, Pershing wants to keep everybody going. There were some American commanders, however, when the order was given to move forward, basically just said, you know, let's just kind of stay put here. There's no real need to move forward. There are some other commanders who tried to hold up as much as they possibly could, depending on your overall commander. Now, the last casualty, the absolute last casualty of World War One, ends up being an American. His name is Henry N. Gunther from Baltimore, Maryland. An American of German descent. How ironic. Gunther was drafted 5 months after the war was declared. He became part of what is referred to as the 313th Unit, called Baltimore's Own. Gunther was made supply sergeant. Now, it's my understanding this unit was drawn from an area not very far from where I grew up in Baltimore. After arriving in France in July of 1918, Henry wrote a friend back home a letter and told him how bad the conditions were and that if whatever he could possibly do to try and stay out of the war. Well, you know, the only problem with writing a letter is they're all red. And so the censor read the letter. Instead of returning it or destroying it, he took it to Gunther's commanding officer, who then broke him to private. In other words, reduced his rank to private, which actually put Gunther under the command of one of his former friends. On September, the 313th was at the front and would have about 2 months of almost constant fighting. And at that point, Gunther volunteered to be a runner. Now, this is a really terrible job. You know, Adolf Hitler did this too, but you're moving from place to place. His job was to run communications between regimental and brigade headquarters. And one time, he was badly wounded in the arm, which was, I believe, a bad enough wound that he could have been removed from the line, but he wanted to stay with his friends and refused to leave. On November the 313th at 9:30 a.m. was slogging through a marsh area in heavy fog. They were hoping they were heading towards Ville-devant-Chaumont. German artillery then opened fire. Now, in a marshy area, it's not going to do a whole lot to you. It'll hit into the mud and then boom, blow up, and you get mud splattered everywhere. However, the runner that was bringing the news of the armistice was killed before he made it to the front communications area. And then communications broke down between the 313th and the 315th units. Finally, at 10:44, this is 16 minutes before the end, a runner made it to the main unit of the 313th, and then more runners were sent out to the advanced units. Ahead of the advanced units of the 313th were two German machine gun positions. They came out of the marsh area, the German machine gun position, were in the process of getting ready to leave. They fired some shots over the head of the Americans, causing them to hit the dirt. And that was supposed to say, you know, hey, what are you doing? The war is almost over. Don't be stupid. And the Germans believed that that little burst would stop everything, and then at 11 o'clock it would all be over. But something snapped inside of Gunther, who jumped up and charged the German position. Gunther's sergeant was yelling at him to stop. The Germans were waving at him to stop. And he kept coming, and he kept coming, and they kept coming, and they finally had to defend themselves and shot and killed him at 10:59 a.m. Now, Henry Gunther later had his rank restored. He was awarded the Distinguished Service Cross, and today, post 1850 of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, is the Henry D. Gunther Post. On November the 11th, 320 Americans died on the last day. So we reached the point where we're finally done. The shooting is over. Now the mess that occurs afterwards begins, which of course will be the peace treaty, the war of the Reds and the Whites, and all sorts of different things. So as far as sources for this, the book I've been using frequently throughout this whole time is The 11th Month, The 11th Day, and The 11th Hour by Persico, The World War I Data Book by Ellis and Cox, The Official History of the Canadian Army, 1914 to 1918, and The British History, Military Operations in France and Flanders, 1918, Volume 5. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, and thank you very much.